This is Valley Public Radio. I'm Joe Moore. This Sunday is another opportunity to hear the Fresno Philharmonic in concert at the William Saroyan Theater in Fresno. This week, the concert features music by Camille Saint-Saëns, Beethoven, and Shostakovich. It also features conductor Daniel Meyer, one of the six candidates for the position of music director of the Philharmonic. He's joining us now at Valley Public Radio. Daniel, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Joe.
I want to talk about the concert and what's on the bill for this week, but we want to know more about you, as we're doing with all of the candidates who are in town this year with the orchestra. You're originally from Cleveland and now reside in Pittsburgh, where you lead two orchestras on the East Coast, the Erie Philharmonic and the Asheville Symphony. Let's go back, though, to early in your career.
Absolutely.
And as a student in Cleveland, how did you get started on this path that you're on now? And did you always want to be a conductor, or was it to be a performer?
No, I didn't want to be either, frankly. I wanted to be a professional ball player, and then later I wanted to become a physician, and then I wanted to become a lawyer and a politician, and now all those things roll into becoming a maestro, becoming a conductor. It's kind of amazing how all these divergent paths kind of inform each other. But I grew up in a very musical family. My mother was a vocal music teacher in the public schools, and she started me off singing and playing the piano when I was still in diapers. I have wonderful family photos of just kind of plunking away at the top of the piano while she would sing songs. And then, of course, I started formally training on the piano, I think, when I was in kindergarten. And then these were the glory years in the public schools when the string teacher got to grab you in third grade and say, hey, would you like to play the violin or the cello? And I chose the violin, and I loved it. I loved performing. I loved having music as part of my life. And I played in the school orchestras all the way through high school and through college and studied music, and I actually matriculated at Denison University in Granville, Ohio, as a pre-law major. But my advisor said, well, look, with all this musical experience and this accomplishment, you have to at least minor in music so that you can have your lessons included as part of your study. And I thought that was pretty savvy advice, so I did. So I was very active in campus. I was playing in the orchestra. I was singing in the top choir. I was involved in the musicals. And then I was also writing a lot of music. I was really becoming a composer, whether I wanted to or not. I just had this music in me that needed to get out somehow. And that's how I came to conducting, frankly. I had written some pieces for the college choir, and my conductor and mentor said, look, would you like to get up in front of this group and conduct them? And all of my colleagues shot me a look, and they just looked at me as if, oh, you're toast now. And I very sheepishly got up out of my seat and stood up in front of them and started waving my arms, and that was my lightning bolt moment. I knew at that moment I had to figure out what it took to become a conductor. I just loved the experience. It was so emotional. It was so intellectual. It was thrilling to have my own music come back at me just through waving my arms and communicating with my eyes and my body. And then after Denison, I applied for a Rotary scholarship at Denison, won an opportunity to go to Vienna, Austria, and formally study conducting for a semester. And then I actually came back and did a full Rotary scholarship year after that. But I went to the Cincinnati Conservatory and did work there and got my master's degree in conducting. So the thing that you realize very soon on is that it is a path unlike any other, in that you can't take a prescribed course. You can't take an LSAT or an MCAT and gain admittance. You really have to forge your own path as a conductor. Mine just happened to come as a maker of music, as a creator of music. And of course, I was very grateful that I had all this training as a violinist and as a singer and a composer and as a pianist, because that all informed the way that I made music.
So how do you go about improving as a conductor, learning the craft? Because you're not only learning and evolving your approach with a particular composer, a particular piece of music, but also interpersonal communications, yeah, dealing with the orchestra, and also all the things that go on off of the stage, outside of the concert hall, things in the community, fundraising. That, how do you go about learning your craft in your line of work? Very different from law school, as you said.
Well, the problem with conducting is that it's very medieval, in that you don't really learn how to conduct until you do it. You can't study, you can't practice on something, you can't wave your arms in front of a mirror and get the sensation that's crucial, which is, what is my gestural language eliciting? What am I getting back when I do this with my arm or my hand or with my eyes or when I stop to say something? What am I saying to the orchestra that will improve the situation? And as you say, there's so much wrapped into that beyond just a musicality and having a command of the notes and what you want to do with these particular pieces of art. Then there's the whole element of psychology and the element of managing people and the element of inspiring people that have spent their lifetimes perfecting what they do. And you need to galvanize those people into one singular interpretation that's going to happen on Saturday night or Sunday afternoon. So that it's humbling, number one, but number two, it's really thrilling because I believe this is a path that takes a lifetime to master. And I only know this now because I've been in the field and have had the experience of conducting Brahms' Fourth Symphony a number of times and realizing I can't wait till I get to conduct Brahms for the 20th time, because I then imagine all the things that I will have absorbed and experienced. So just to circle back, this idea that it's medieval is that you really have to apprentice. You have to watch somebody who does it really, really well and take good notes, and then hopefully impart that and absorb some of that into your own gestural language and the own way that you deal with people and with a group of very highly skilled and trained musicians to inspire them to bring something to the table that maybe they hadn't thought of or would not have done on their own. So that's why it's a humbling experience, but it's also a thrilling one and one that I take very seriously each time that I step up on the podium.
You mentioned very early on wanting to be a ball player, and this sort of struck something up here with me, in that we hear in various sports analogies people talk about the fraternity of the great ones. They talk amongst each other and they trade tips and things. You hear about Ted Williams, the great slugger for the Boston Red Sox, providing his tips to later players of other generations and talking about things. Does that same sort of thing happen in the conductor world, where an older, more veteran conductor takes you under their wing and talk about a particular piece or various things, how you deal with an orchestra? Is that how it works? And if so, who are those people? Who are those mentors for you?
I've been very lucky to have some wonderful mentors who thought that it was important to impart their wisdom on me. The first most critical one, I would say, was probably my high school orchestra director. His name was Wayne Miller, and he fashioned, this was at a Franciscan high school, so it was very unusual for a parochial school to have a top-notch orchestra, but we did, and we won state competitions every year, and he just had this standard of excellence that, and this is what I love about music, anything less than an A+ is a disappointment. Because you have to play the notes at the right time, the right notes, in tune, yet also imbue those notes with an incredible passion and love for the emotion that went into creating those notes. So these mentors are ones that kind of hold up excellence as something that should be striven for, even if you're not always going to achieve a quote-unquote perfect performance. And then my mentor at Denison, Dr. William Osborne, same way, cut from the same cloth, this idea of excellence and the pursuit of and the passion for details. And then I, along the way, ran into some really wonderful musicians like David Hoos at Boston University. My first conducting mentor, Kirk Trevor, at the Knoxville Symphony in Tennessee, had a real passion for teaching and for gestural language. And he had developed an entire system based on what can you do physically to get the orchestra comfortable to play well together. And then I had some amazing musicians and conductors that I had the great fortune of working with, Maurice Janssens and the Pittsburgh Symphony, who now, of course, has a major international career that includes the Berlin Philharmonic, the Vienna Philharmonic, the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam, the Bavarian Radio, among others. Just an amazing musical spirit and someone who really thought that you needed to dig behind the notes to bring out the passion and the emotion that's in the music. And Manfred Honeck, who's the current music director of the Pittsburgh Symphony, an incredible Austrian musician who started his career as a violist in the Vienna Philharmonic and always had an eye for the chance to step up on the podium and become a conductor himself, and now a brilliant technician, a wonderful musical mind, and somebody whom I consider a friend, and I can talk to him about music and say, Manfred, would you mind steering me through this particular piece and giving me your thoughts? But then just watching the great conductors at work, oh, I love attending rehearsals, whether I sneak into one or I've been invited to attend. I love bringing my score and watching these great musicians at work, because they always bring something fascinating. And it's interesting, because now that I'm into my career, we really are lone wolves as conductors. We don't get a lot of opportunity to interface with our colleagues because we're out making the music, and there's only one of us in each community working with our orchestras. So I really relish the opportunity to sneak into a rehearsal or to watch someone else work, because I always feel like there's something more I can bring to my artistry and to my work by absorbing great work that others do.
Daniel Meyer is our guest today on Valley Public Radio. He's one of six candidates vying to be the next music director and conductor of the Fresno Philharmonic. He is performing with the orchestra this Sunday at the Soroyan Theater, performing music by Beethoven, Shostakovich, and Camille Saint-Saëns. We'll talk about that in a moment. But I want to go back to something you just said. You've been doing this for a while and talking about Brahms 4 and things like that. But how would you say you've changed as a conductor? You now lead two orchestras and you have guest spots at a number of others. Currently, you lead the Asheville Symphony and the Erie Philharmonic in Pennsylvania. How would you say you've evolved as a conductor over the years?
Wow, I would say in a number of ways. One is just a sheer technical way, and that is feeling much more comfortable in a leadership position and standing in front of a really seasoned and highly trained group of musicians, and knowing that a gesture that I give is going to elicit a specific response, and that I can lead people through a Mahler symphony or a Puccini opera and have some success in really digging beyond the notes and projecting what I think the music means to the musicians and ultimately to the audience. The other is, and you alluded to this a little bit earlier, this idea of a community leader, this idea that my role as conductor isn't just primarily a musical one, but also an inspirational one, one that believes that great art, great music, great performances should be a part of a community's fabric, that it's aspirational. When you get to sit down in a hall and watch 85 to 100 musicians firing on all 12 cylinders, doing their very best, bringing their entire lives of training and of musical work, and watching those lives intersect and create a passionate performance is something that I don't think you can get anywhere else. I really believe that. I firmly believe that to experience a wonderful performance of great music played by a wonderful orchestra, a committed orchestra, is something that will change you, will make you think about your life differently, will lift you in some way. And I always get charged about that. And that's why I love attending concerts as much as I love leading them, because I always feel like there's something I'm going to take away from that experience that will change my life for the better. And that's something that I just gets reinforced to me each and every time that I take the stage as a conductor, or when I have the great opportunity to watch a great orchestra work in Vienna or Boston or New York or San Francisco.
Orchestras across the country, across the globe for that matter, are all looking at new ways to attract younger audiences, more diverse audiences. You've experienced that with the orchestras that you lead. How do you think, based on your experience, seeing what's worked where you've been and what works in other communities, what would be your approach to do that? Because the Fresno Philharmonic, like those other orchestras I mentioned, they're all looking for the way to build audience, sustain existing audience, uphold musical excellence, but also bring in new listeners and ensure that orchestras are here for the next century.
I like that you mentioned musical excellence, because for me, that's so inspirational. And I think it needs to be job number one. If we're not doing our best, then people are going to pick up on that right away. People are so savvy and they have so many choices now, and they don't even need to leave their living room couch to get really amazing content and really amazing art. But where I think the difference is that when you're actually in the room and you are part of the process and you're an audience member of a great performance, that's where it's at. It's that live experience. It's that engaging with and interfacing with great art that I think is transformational. And you can't just have it on, you know, while you're cooking or mopping the floor. It's something that you actually have to shut your phone off for and give yourself over for a couple hours. And I think if you're able to invest in that way, then that's the most incredible aspect of a concert experience. And so my challenge, and the challenge in today's orchestra field, is really training people to do that. because we're so accustomed to. And I know this now just from my own television watching, that if I get slightly bored, believe me, I'm changing that channel. I'm not going to linger there. And so I take that very seriously. And part of that has to do with my role as a programmer, as a curator of the music that we play. So it means that I have to choose the best pieces that I think that the orchestra can play, and that the orchestra can play well, but also to a degree that there's an element of surprise or adventure in each concert. I really think that orchestras go wrong when they start to pander or to program pieces that they think is going to draw on an audience. Audiences are smarter than that, and they get bored with that really quickly. So as much as we might love Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, it probably really ought to come around every 5 or 6 years and not come over with a regularity that people just treat it as kind of, you know, a rendering of the Mona Lisa or the Eiffel Tower that just shows up everywhere. I think concerts should be living, breathing, exciting, and challenging experiences, which is why I try to include music of our time. I try to include music by cultures that are different from my own. I try to find composers that love the music as much as I do, but have their own distinctive voice and bring that to their own concert works. And so for me, I think the best way is to play really well, but also play really interesting combinations of music that turn people on to what we're doing.
Let's go ahead and go from there into this concert on Sunday with the Fresno Philharmonic. You have composers of three distinct eras, with starting out with Beethoven, and then you have music by Shostakovich, his cello concerto, and then the Saint-Saëns organ symphony. Tell me about your approach and how you went about putting these three pieces together.
Well, to be frank, I was asked to program pieces from different eras and different types of works. But it's very much in alignment with what I would do as common practice anyway. I think the only thing that's different from this program per se than maybe some of the other programs that I would choose is that there is not a work by a living composer. And I generally try to find something, at least every other concert by a living composer, that's really an interesting piece or a wonderful piece to listen to or has something really important to say about the other works. That said, the three works on this program for Sunday are incredible works in and of their own. The Ekmont Overture, of course, is this prototypical pre-romantic, actually we could say early romantic, heroic piece of Beethoven, where this struggle against good and bad, or the struggle against oppression and liberation, is all built into the notes of the music, and you hear this struggle and you hear this passion and this struggle. Beethoven he famously struggled in his personal life, in his artistic life, and it's all there in the music, and that's what I think makes the Ekmont Overture so powerful. In terms of the Shostakovich, also, that second movement, I mean, just the bleakness of what life must have been in that Soviet era, where you're trying to make music that will appease the government, but also really connect with the hearts of people. And I can't but help think that people sitting in a cold concert hall in St. Petersburg, hearing this for the first time, would understand what Shostakovich was really trying to say. And some of the subversiveness that's in his music is a little bit more obvious in this piece, because he uses his own initials very prominently. He takes the notes of the scale, D, the note D, and then S, which is E flat in the German language, and then C, and then H, which is actually B natural in the German language. So Dmitri Shostakovich, the first letter of his first name and then the first three letters of his second name are encoded in the music. And he plays around with that motive and makes it a leading theme in the piece. And so there's a surface element to that, of course, which makes it really interesting. What does he do with those notes? But then there's also a subversive or an undercurrent of what does this mean when he's using his own name in a piece that's supposed to appease the masses, that's supposed to appease the government, that's supposed to be lifting Soviet culture. But the great thing about this work is that it's so personal. It lays bare his soul, and it really challenges the solo cellist to the height of his or her technical abilities, in this case his, with Amit Peled. But I would say the Shostakovich is a very personal work. There's moments of darkness, there's moments of exploration, but then there's moments of real fist shaking. And I think people will respond to that. And then the Saint-Saëns, the Third Symphony, the Organ Symphony. This is a master composer, someone for whom putting notes together on the page was not a hard thing at all. In fact, I read recently that that was a criticism of Saint-Saëns, that it was almost too easy for him to write music. So you don't necessarily hear the struggle that you would hear in Beethoven or Shostakovich's music, but you certainly hear this amazing love of sounds. And of course, it's like Beethoven did with the Ninth Symphony when he added the choir. Saint-Saëns adding an organ to the sound of the symphony orchestra to just expand the color possibilities, expand the color palette to the nth degree. So in this, it's essentially a two-movement work, but it's really a four-movement work. And that second beautiful cantilena, the singing movement, where the strings sing and the organ just provides these luscious chords beneath it that just kind of hover. And then, of course, what you would expect from an organ symphony is this very triumphant, loud, bombastic ending. You get that as well. But overall, I think the work is rather cohesive. It's rather powerful in terms of its statements. And I also think it's just really attractive. It's just fun to be in the same place when the orchestra's playing to the full hilt, and then you've got the organ blaring away. I'm excited about this program. I think it's kind of a home run in terms of exploring the depths that music can take you, but also the degree to which you can just get lifted out of your seat by a sonic experience like the Saint-Saëns.
You're about to go into the rehearsals for this particular program and meet the orchestra for the first time. Can you contrast that experience of going into a new orchestra, whether it's one that you're just a guest conductor of, or in this case, essentially a job interview, a job audition, versus that of the orchestra that you work with all the time, or in this case, the orchestras that you lead in Asheville and in Erie, Pennsylvania. How are those two experiences different? And maybe describe what it's like to be in front of that orchestra for the first time. How do you go about approaching that?
Well, obviously, in this situation, there is a bit of getting to know you. And I don't know the personalities. I don't know the capabilities. I don't know what kind of gesture I need to give for the oboe so that he or she will be connected to the concertmaster, to the principal bass. And those are things that I have to learn pretty quickly, like within 2 minutes of conducting. So I usually try to pick up a piece in the repertoire where I can do those sorts of things and get a really quick picture, overall picture of what the capabilities are and frankly what the limitations are of the hall maybe, or the acoustics, or what do I need to do to adjust my concept and my interpretation of the piece to the reality of bringing it to life with philharmonic musicians. So that's always actually thrilling to me as well, that unknown. Now contrasting that with groups with which I work on a regular basis, I already know all those things. So it's a matter of, oh, yeah, I imagined how that solo might be played. Or, yeah, I know the tendencies now of the musicians or our reaction. And I don't have to worry so much about the technique. Technique, of course, is always there. And there are certainly moments where we just need to stop and remind ourselves that we need to pay attention to those issues. But for me, you want to get to the point where where technique is kind of understood, and that you're digging behind what these notes mean and how you can shape a phrase so that it connects to the next phrase, or that it's divorced from the previous phrase. And you start to think about all of those infinite decisions that you make from a technical standpoint that then influence how the music is rendered from an emotional and a spiritual and an overall musical standpoint. So I can't wait. I'm really thrilled. I hope that we cross over those technical thresholds rather quickly and get right into the music and start to peel away the layers that I think are embedded in all three of these works.
We talked about the process of learning how to be a conductor and interfacing with others in your craft in the context of you being a young conductor starting out your career, the people who are mentors to you. If you were approached by a young conductor today, what sort of advice would you give he or she?
Wow. I would say absorb and perform as much as you can. If you're not a good singer, join a chorus and get in there and learn what the technical difficulties are in singing with a chorus.
Interesting, because that would not be the thing that I would necessarily think of. Why specifically the chorus in an orchestral setting?
Singing is primal. If you can't sing it, you can't play it. In fact, a lot of the work that I do with instrumentalists is to say, would you really sing it that way? You know, why limit yourself to the technical deficiencies of your own instrument? And every instrument has deficiencies, of course, and there, even the voice, of course, the human voice is limited by range and by capability. But there's something primal about singing. If I can sing a phrase to you, you understand it immediately. And I can actually solve a lot of issues. And I can sing how I think something ought to be rendered much more quickly than I can, you know, use five sentences to say the same thing. And frankly, most of these composers that we love today knew what they were doing in terms of writing for the voice. Johannes Brahms was a great leader composer and a great choral composer and was a choral conductor himself. Mozart's music, all of his symphonic music, his piano concertos are considered instrumental operas because of the interplay between the solo piano and the orchestra. Tchaikovsky, I mean, can you imagine Tchaikovsky without Eugene Onegin or Queen of Spades? I mean, incredible vocal composer who then imbued his melodies with these wonderful singing lines and these the sensibility that we're always breathing, we're always inhaling and exhaling, and part of that normal breathing process is how you construct a melody or how you construct a musical phrase that then begets another and begets another. So for me, that's one of the first things I say, is to get involved in vocal music and sing or participate in opera, because it's just so critical to the understanding of how you build a phrase and how you interpret a piece of music.
I want to close on one thing here with Daniel Meyer, one of the candidates for the position of musical director and conductor with the Fresno Philharmonic, performing with the orchestra this weekend. We've asked asked Stephen Wilson what he's looking for in a candidate and a conductor. What are you looking for in an orchestra when you come into a community like Fresno, come in to meet the orchestra? And we've talked a little bit about that first rehearsal, but what do you look for?
First and foremost, I'm looking for a community that loves its orchestra and wants to see it thrive well into the future and is doing everything it can to do that. That's the most important thing. If you don't have that passion, that goes for anything, really, whether you're participating in a sport or showing up at 9 o'clock in the morning or teaching a group of kids, if you don't have that spark, really, or that fire in your belly for what you're doing, that gets communicated very quickly. And people either turn off to it or shy away from it. So I certainly want to find a situation where that pilot light is lit, and all I have to do is kind of blow on it, mm-hmm. metaphorically speaking, and keep things launched and keep it afloat. But the other thing, of course, is then a group of musicians that respect each other and respect the music that they play and love it and come to the stage prepared and ready to give their all. And that's not easy in today's world, because a lot of our musicians I work with, they wear four or five different hats. So it's difficult to stay on top of the music and really come to the first rehearsal prepared. But I'm very grateful when I have an opportunity with my musicians that love the repertoire that we play and give it a lot of passion. Because let's face it, when I'm rehearsing with them, I have a limited window in which to impart some ideas and to shape the performance. So really, the musicians have to come ready to go, ready to play.
One more question. Orchestras often take on a particular character. In some cases, it's tied to their conductor. How would you characterize one of your orchestras, or how you would like your orchestra to be described, characterized outside? What sort of personality trait would you like it to take on?
I would love the performances to have a clarity of detail, but imbued with a real heart and a real fire and passion and a sweep, so that people appreciate the beauty of the details, but at the end of the day, leave the hall thinking, wow, I really went on a ride.
Daniel Meyer is one of the six candidates for the position of musical director and conductor of the Fresno Philharmonic. He will perform with the orchestra this Sunday at 3 o'clock, leading the Fresno Philharmonic in a concert featuring the Saint-Saëns Organ Symphony, as well as Dmitri Shostakovich's cello concerto and music by Beethoven as well. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure, Joe. Thank you.